Good evening. My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's a pleasure to be here. It's a privilege to be here. I got to go to my, I have six grandchildren. I'm 61 years old. I have six grandchildren. And one of my grandkids, she's in first grade, had a recital tonight. So I had to juggle things around, but we managed to get up here anyway, and she danced to Cotton Eye Joe. I got it all on video. And, you know, if you know anything about me, I'm probably not that good a husband. And I'm really a so-so father, although my four kids, they seem to like me. But I am a dynamite grandpa. I mean, I'm like a sold out. I mean, I know this is going to sound strange to you, but in the back of my car, I've got pictures all over the place. I've got an iPhone with 3,400 pictures. 3,396 of them are of my grandkids. And, you know, I know you're going to find this hard to believe. There is actually a tape of me. Somebody was listening to it the other day. They were telling me about it that I made 2 years ago. And I can't remember exactly what was going on this tape because I didn't listen to it, but they did. But somehow in the middle of the meeting, I whipped out pictures of my grandkids and passed them around the room. It happened, and this guy liked the tape, you know. I mean, and I was going to the back of my car to get my books. I left my books, and I was going through, you know, I have Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, and I have the Big Book. I got all sorts of big and stuff, and I was going to get my books, and I couldn't find them. So as I'm going through things, I came upon about 20 8x10 glossies of my grandkids. And I lifted them up and started looking at them, and like for a brief second, for a moment, I thought of maybe bringing them in and passing them around. But you guys have been saved from that. But the truth is, after the meeting, if there is anybody who wants to see my grandkids, or see the video I just made, I've got several videos on my iPhone. The one that I just made of Isabella dancing to Cotton Eye Joe, I'm happy to show it to you. There's no problem there. So all this is all whatever I have going for me today in terms of that kind of stuff is due to a relationship I have now with the God of my understanding that I want to talk to you a little bit about. I'm sort of like humbled really to talk about God as I understand him. I want to read a few things. You know, I always think the best thing for me to do in an AA meeting, this is what I feel is my responsibility. I'm not responsible to get anybody sober. I'm not responsible to teach you in the sense that I make you understand. I understand a little bit. My understanding of alcoholism is, and I agree with this principle that when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And if somebody's not ready, there's really not much you can do is maybe plant the seed or something. You know, my responsibility is just to do the best I can. I just try to carry the message, which means to do the best I can tonight. It sort of takes the pressure off. It doesn't have to be the best third step meeting in the world. It doesn't even have to be the best third step meeting that I've ever done in my life. It doesn't even have to be that good of a third step meeting. It just has to be the best third step meeting I can do tonight. And that's what I'm going to try to give you. And by that, I'm going to try to be as honest as possible and as transparent as possible. You know, you try to start thinking. Of course, that's the real bugaboo with alcoholics, thinking. As soon as you start thinking, you're already screwed. You know what I mean? So the way I approach it, you know, different people approach it, and different people have different gifts. And the way I approach it, which, quite honestly, not only makes me feel more comfortable, I sort of feel that it's a good thing for me because it lets me step aside and lets God take over. The way I approach it is I try to think about what I'm going to say as little as possible. You know, that way, you know, whatever comes out is unhampered by my worries about what I think you think about me or what you think I should say or anything like that. You know, I might have a general outline, but on page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. You know, you're going to find in AA, we got thousands and millions of people that, you know, look at this thing a gazillion different ways. We got every end of the spectrum here. we've got every thought pattern. We got hardcore atheists. We have agnostics. We got people that love God. We have born again Christians. We have everything you can possibly imagine going on in A room. You can get an argument with anybody about God in an A room. And the only thing I can do, honestly, here is sort of share, you know, it's like a giant marketplace. You know, you get to see the goods. You get to see the people. And I always believe what's true will last. And not only that, I believe all things will eventually be revealed. You know, it's like the old, what is the old Abraham Lincoln? You can fool some people all the time and all the people some of the time. You can't fool all the people all the time. You know, and so the truth of the matter is, I think there is, you know, what kind of sobriety you are and who you are, and over a period of time, this is like a giant self-cleaning oven. Every 2 or 3 years, the BS burns off anyway. So somehow, some way, the people who are doing this thing right, whatever right is, get to where they got to go. And if you're not doing it right, and if you don't get it, and if there's defiance left in you, and if you don't want to surrender, and you still have a willfulness that keeps you from accepting what's in this book, what it's simply going to mean is you're going to drink again. Or you're not going to drink, but you're not going to experience that being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. You're not going to experience that feeling of heaven that they talk about. What does it say? We've experienced heaven and been rocketed in the fourth dimension. You're not going to experience all the promises, you know, on a routine or sort of like permanent basis, and experience the kind of happiness they're talking about. You may be sober. You may have 25 years sober. You may have 30 years sober. But there's going to be something about you that other people are going to see that it's just not going to jive with the physical sobriety. There's going to be something about you emotionally. You're going to be a loner. You're not going to have a lot of friends. You're going to, you know, it says most people live lives of quiet desperation. Having 25 or 30 years sobriety and being pissed off or angry, you know, or a bleeding deacon, or being upset and not happy with your life and not having incredible relationships in your life, you know, should tell people something. You know, if there's anything about alcoholics, it's the one thing about alcoholism, which I know is true, is the absolute failure to see what the hell's really going on. If there's one thing you can tell about an alcoholic is they're pretty dumb. For brilliant people. You know what I mean? I mean, as brilliant as we're the people that think we're doing great as we're being locked up. We're the people that telling you how incredible we are, and people saying, well, then why is your wife divorcing you? They're taking your kids away. We're the ones that are saying, but you don't understand. We are absolutely sure that everything's okay while the world's looking at us and saying, why is he being arrested? I mean, if you're doing that well, how come, you know, if you're so right about that, why do you feel so crappy? I mean, if you're so right, why aren't you smiling all the time? Why are you pissed? If you're so right about this deal, why are you upset? You know, I was talking to a friend of mine today. I said, man, I can tell a lot about people, not by what verses they can quote and what they can say in the big book or how long you've been. I can tell a lot about people by what makes them angry, what it takes to make them angry. I can tell a lot about people. I can tell more about people. You can tell a lot about people as to what happens when the pressure comes on. You know, everybody's, you know, high-fiving everybody else and having a good time when the money's in the bank and they got a relationship and they got a car that runs and a place to stay. I can tell a lot about people. And as you know, I go to church and I'm a Christian. I'm a deacon. I'm involved in that stuff. A part of my journey in this deal, it doesn't have only to do with people in Alcoholics Anonymous. It could have people to do with church or anything like that. People say they're. I can tell a lot about people by just how they react when the crap hits the fan, when the pressure is on. Do they fall apart? Do they blank? Because I'll tell you something. There could be a thin veneer of sobriety where you can look and sound sober, and you can actually talk to a crowd and pull it off. But I'll tell you, when the heat is on and the check bounces and the boss fires you or the girlfriend, boyfriend, you know, files for divorce or moves it out, when the stuff starts happening, that's when you find the real story. That's when you find out what's really going on. You know, how does a person react under pressure? How's he feeling? How's he looking? What's coming out of his mouth? And you can, and I don't know about you, but you know, I don't know whether it's just because I'm, I don't think it's because I'm smart or anything. I think that kind of stuff is easy to see in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it says if you want what we have, then you only go to any length to get it. It says the step before the steps is if you want what we have, and you're willing to get any step together, then you're willing to take certain steps. You're ready to take certain steps. So apparently, before you take step one, it presupposes that you have enough going, enough neurons clicking in your head that you'll be able to see something you want. You'll be able to develop a group of we people in your life where you'll say, I don't know what that guy is or what he has, but whatever's going on in his life, he's got something that I can't even tell you what it is. I can't even define it. I don't know. He's just happy. He's just in a good mood. People like, I just, when I'm around him, I feel good. I like listening. Whatever it is, there's something about him. I wish I could be like him or be around him or figure out what's going on. He's got some. Apparently, no matter how dumb you are, no matter how sick you are, whether you've read the book or not read the book, there are some people that come in here that are well enough or got something going for them enough to understand they've got something, I don't, I want to hang around them. By the same token, apparently there are groups of people that can come in here and be around the same people and say, I don't want any of that at all. I don't want any of that at all. You know, there's a lot of people like that too. And you know, but you know, we each have an individual thing. And the great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that nobody tells you that you have to do anything. It's your life. It's your life. That's the great thing. And you know something, it ain't a dress rehearsal. This ain't like, you know, you go through the whole life and, I mean, I don't think it's like you go through the whole life and then on your deathbed you say, I think I screwed that one up. I think I'll try it differently the next time. You know, this is like you screwed the pooch. I mean, that's it. You know, I mean, why didn't I go to that Bible study? Why didn't I hang around that guy? Why was I so worried about why that person sitting next to me, you know, thought I was, you know, how many, do you have, you know, somewhere along the line, I'm going to talk about fear here. You know, we all think that we are free to do things. I mean, how much do you think fear plays in our lives? How much do you think our actions and what we say and what we do has to do with less what we want to do and more about fear that we're going to have consequences of people laughing at us, judging us, or whatever it is if we don't do it a certain way? How many people do you think before they speak at an AA meeting are trying to determine what they should say or how they should say it depending upon who's in the room? How many people do you think dress the way they dress thinking about who's going to be looking at them? How much of your day do you think where you're making decisions every day as to who you hang out with, what you're going to do, where you're going to be, what you're going to say, has to do with absolute fear, so deeply embedded, fear of other people's judgments and how you'll look and what they'll think about you, you know, where you don't even realize you're making the decisions, not because you really want to do it that way, but because you're scared or you're anxious or you're worried. How many people think that, you know, even when you're in a crowd and somebody says something, you may disagree or whatever, how much of your life, what do you think is based upon just downright fear of doing it differently or fear of the unknown? What, about 90%? 100%? You know, I figure pretty much for newcomers it's about 100%. Now, I think pretty much alcoholics, and I'm not saying everybody out there does it differently. You know, I think we're just a little bit more so. I think it's all going on out there. You know, I think, you know, one way of deciding whether you're going to do something, you know, this God thing. Why are alcoholics so worried about the God thing? Why are they so worried about the God thing? I don't know. I have a theory. I could be wrong. You know, I think alcoholics want to be cool. I think they want to be cool. I think if it was cool, if the entire world thought it was cool, I think if all the movies we saw envisioned all the guys, I think if the Brad Pitts of this world and all the famous movie stars in this world, you know, worship, let's say, Jesus, I think there'd be more alcoholics that we're worshiping than anybody else in the entire world. You know, I don't care, Muhammad, whatever you want to say, I think alcoholics will do anything to be thought of as being cool. And they will run away from anything that where somebody might judge them and laugh at them. And I think that has something to do with having a low opinion of yourself. I think when you have a real low opinion of yourself and you hate yourself, which is probably why alcoholics walk around saying, I wish I was a dead, I'm a piece of crap, and you know, it's probably one of the reasons why Carl Menninger said in the book Man Against Himself, and that he lumped the chapter to the agnostics in the chapter on suicide, he said alcoholics are men and women out to destroy themselves. Maybe we're out to destroy ourselves because we just hate ourselves so much, no matter how great. We have that weird thing going. We think we're the greatest thing in the world. We think we're different. You don't understand, we're unique. And on the other end, we think we're pieces of crap. It sets up some sort of anxiety. I don't know. Some guy said I had a split personality. I said I wish I could get it down to two. You know? But, you know, but alcohol fixes that, doesn't it? Alcohol fixes that. It does one of two things. The alcohol does one in the beginning. It made your piece of shit go away. You know, in the beginning, when you start drinking the alcohol, it's like your piece of shit goes away, and you're just the greatest thing in God. You're the God's gift to everything. You know, you walk in thinking you want to belong to the group. You take a couple of shots, you own the group. But in the end of the drinking, the greatest thing in the world goes away, and your piece of shit gets elevated. It does a little switcheroo on you, you know? Keeps on playing. So a lot of this stuff and a lot of decisions we make and our failure to make decisions have to do with downright fear. We're just scared to do it. We're scared to people. And, you know, hey, nobody's more scared. There's nothing alcoholics are more scared of than that they'll be laughed at by other alcoholics. I had a guy come up the other day. Now, you know, I guess I have this reputation. I don't mind it. It's okay. You know, I mean, we have all sorts of people. You get, one of the things you get to do in Judge Neil, you'll get to get people up here who are like against God or, you know, watering it down or whatever it is, atheist, agnostic, it doesn't matter. You'll get guys like me, you know, obnoxiously talking about gods. Of course, I don't think I'm obnoxious, but if I am, that's okay. You know, I mean, so I had a guy come up to me the other day and he said, after one of my meetings, he says, they never talk about God or the Bible or Scripture or the stuff you talk about. They never talk about that at any of the AA meetings I go to. And I said, well, that's amazing. They talk about it at all the AA meetings I go to. I've never gone to an AA meeting that isn't Scripture friendly. You know what I mean? I mean, when you're dealing with a fellowship where they say first things first, which came right out of, according to Dr. Bob, came right out of the line, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all things will be added unto you. And when you come out of a group where one day at a time came out of the chapter, you know, Matthew, where he says, don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow, you know, worry about today. It has enough problems of its own. When people are constantly quoting Jesus without even knowing it, how could you not talk about spiritual things or Scripture? When you're dealing with a book that, if people are interested and they read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, when you're dealing with a book that says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, and Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers says in the first 5 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, they didn't have the big book, all they did was study the Bible. And the three books that the old timers found absolutely essential were 1 Corinthians 13, the book of James, and Sermon on the Mount. How could you be involved in this and not be involved in that stuff or talking about that stuff or thinking about that stuff, especially in a group that prides itself in being open-minded, honest, and truthful, unless it scared the shit out of you? I mean, it couldn't have anything to do with having integrity or being truthful. It had to have something to do with scaring the crap. And why would it scare the crap out of you? Just because in AA, even if you said something or even hinted at something, somebody would come up to you and criticize you and say, we don't talk about that stuff. But why don't you just shut up? Because you'll meet characters like that in AA. Because that scares people. You know, but you know, it's your life. It's your life. You're going to decide, you know, when you're 50, 60, 70, 80, however old you are, as you're going through your life, how you're going to spend it, what you're going to worry about, who you're going to allow to mold your life. And I was just fortunate enough, and I don't know, maybe I was beaten down enough so that I hung around people that were not worried about that stuff, and so they passed it along to me. You know, one of the problems I have, and you know, this is just the way it is I'm 61 years old, and I've been in AA almost 30 years. or as my wife pointed out last night, 29 years and 4 months. I said in a group, I said, well, I've been around almost 30 years. She says, no, you've been around 29 years and 4 months, because my wife's in Al-Anon, and she does an Al-Anon 10-step, and when I'm wrong, she promptly admits it. She says, don't try to make yourself bigger than you are, you know? 29 years. I watched that lowest drink, that lowest deal with her. You watch that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to get myself in trouble. You know, I was sitting there with my wife. I said, man, I'd drink too if I was married to her, you know? What a wimp. What was that all about? I said, my wife was embarrassed. You know, she's the lowest worshiper. My wife was embarrassed. I said, honey, you would have kicked that guy in the nuts. You know, after the first time he came home, you would have whacked him out. You would take care of, I'm probably saying something sacrilegious, but man, talk about codependent. Talk about hanging in there when she should have left the guy, you know? I said, and some guy, a friend of mine who's got, you know, Paul Lee wrote me an email. He says, how could you say that? He says, you're sober today because of Lois, because she hung in there. I said, what are you talking about? How can you say that when you're reading the book? Of course, he's a big NA guy too. He probably doesn't read the book, but I mean, he does. But I said, how can you say that when we got a book that says job or no job, wife or no wife? You know, I mean, you honestly believe that Bill Wilson got this thing all of a sudden because of Lois? I mean, codependents would love to believe that. That's why they're so sick, because they actually think they make a dent, you know? It's not until they get out of the way, you know, that something actually happens, but I digress. So in any event, you know, so one of the things I want to do, one of my problems is, you know, I'm 61 years old. I'm 29 years sober. I've been doing this for a long time. I have certain strong feelings, opinions, and a relationship with God that I want to share with you. It says here, each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language, this is my language, from his own point of view, the way he establishes his relationship with God. So what I think I'm supposed to talk to you about is what they said in the book, how I established my relationship with God, notwithstanding what you may think or maybe you worry. I got to be able to talk about that. And here's the problem. I've been doing this stuff for 29.4 years, 4 months. I'm where I'm at right now with my relationship with God. I would like to think, I know it can be stronger. I'd like to think it's strong. I want to talk about him all the time. I want to think about him all the time. He's the most important thing in my life. And I want to share that with you. And I cannot, as much as I know there are people in here, because I was like you, as much as I know there are people in here that don't want to hear it, that aren't ready to hear it, that are not sure of it, you know, or don't understand it, don't want to go in that direction, as much as I know that, and I want to sort of like talk to them. You know, everybody has certain gifts. There are people that can sort of, I guess, talk to people like that and share it in such a way so it's non-threatening or something. But I can't turn myself into a guy with 3 months. I can't turn myself into a guy with 5 years. You know, I can't talk like I only have 10 years and I'm struggling with the God thing and trying to figure out which way to go. I got to talk like who exactly I am today. And maybe give you some ideas of how I got here and what's going on and what this has meant to me. And then you get to decide, like I got to decide, I like that guy, I don't like that guy, he's got something I want, he doesn't have somebody I want, you know, I'm interested in something he said, or screw it, I'm gonna go over to another part of town. That's going to be your decision. You know, I can't hide this deal. You know what's happening? Because to me, my relationship with God is the most important thing in my life, more important than anything. And I spend more time cultivating that through reading the Bible, through going to Bible study, through talking with people, through hanging around people, because I believe you definitely are who you hang out with. You know, through going to AA meetings, through talking about it to other people. You know, I spend more time on that relationship than on any relationship. It's not a fuzzy thing for me. It's not sort of like, well, I'm spiritual, not religious. It's not a thing for me where you make, it's not a make-believe I love the Lord thing. It's not a make-believe I have a relationship with God by saying a lot of spiritual sort of things that sound like I'm not interested in cars, broads, and stuff like that, like I'm spiritual. It's a real dynamic, serious relationship for me. I don't fool around with it. And I believe in reading the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and reading the material, it was serious for the people who were serious about this program. And I firmly believe it's been totally watered down by tons of alcoholics coming in here through treatment centers and every other way. And I'm not blaming treatment centers, but for millions of people pulling in here who basically walk in here just like they walked in then with a compulsion not to do it. You understand you have a small little program where it's clear in the first 5 years, in the first 10 years, they were locked down crazy about God. They were into God. They were into the Bible. They were serious about this stuff. And somehow it blew up and gazillions of people came in, which was a good thing. Everybody thinks size is better. But all of a sudden, instead of two or three guys and four or five guys coming in, all of a sudden you got 50 or 60 or 100 or 200 guys coming in. Most of which don't want to hear the God thing anyway. And they drown out the voice of the God thing. And all of a sudden, slowly but surely, everything starts changing. And things start drifting in like, just do the next right thing. We don't talk that much about God. It scares you. And you read the book and you read the material written in 1939, where they say God or no God. Where the whole thing is about God. And then you go to an AA meeting and people are uncomfortable when you talk about it. All the material written in 1939 is only about God. And if you talk about an AA meeting today, chances are people are going to take you outside and say, listen, you're talking too much about that stuff. Right? You know that's true. I know it's true because I talk to people all the time. I don't know. And why is that? You know, think about that. Fear. Wanting to fit in. You know, worried about what other people think about you. Is that the life you want to lead? Is that sobriety? You know, is that what you're in here for? So that you can be just as worried, so you can not live the life you want to live and be transformed by the power that's in here? You know, because you're worried about some goof who's an alcoholic and sitting in the front row thinks about you? Is that really, that's what you consider sobriety? That's like a good thing for you? So one of the things I want to do is not only share my experience, but I want to read material to you. Because if you read, I don't think people read the material. No, don't get me wrong. I think they read it, but they don't really read it. I'll put it this way. I think in every meeting, they read chapter 5. And I don't think anybody hears it. I don't think they pay attention to it. Rarely have we seen a person fail to thoroughly follow our path, and I think they read this whole thing, and we sort of listen and wait till it's done, but I don't think anybody pays attention to it. There is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. I think they were serious. No, what does it say? You're an alcoholic. You cannot manage your own life. No human power could relieve you. God could and would if he were sought. Being convinced, we were then at step 3. I think they were serious. I think we read it, but then we sort of like, okay, we've read that deal. Let's go on to the meeting. You know, you wouldn't believe what's going on with my wife. You wouldn't believe what's going on with my job. You know, I can't believe what happened yesterday. I feel crappy. I feel good. I feel bad. One guy wants to talk about the solution. I want to talk about God. He says, we don't talk about that around here. How are you feeling? How do you feel? Why do you think that? We want to make this a psychological program. So let's read some of the stuff in the big book. Now, when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know anything about God. I guess I was an atheist, agnostic. You know, I worship Playboy bunnies and stuff like that, and all the stuff that people worship. So I come in here. So my sponsor hands me this 24-hour book. You don't see it around that much. I'm going to give it to Ted. I give it to the guys I sponsor, a lot of them. Hands me this 24-hour book. Now, they came out, AA came out with their own meditation book. It's a little different. This is the one my sponsor used. In other words, I got sober, you know, I'm a little bit closer to I got sober 29 years ago. My sponsor got sober like 29 years before that. You understand what I'm saying? This is what they used since whenever it was written, 1950s. So this is, he said, I want you to read this I want you to ask God's help to stay sober every morning. And read this every morning. And then I'd say thank you. And I did it. He didn't ask me, I don't remember asking me, do you believe in God? Do you not believe? He didn't want my opinion. He said, just do this. So I read this for every day for 15 years. It got so bad, it got so crazy. You know, I couldn't do much, but I could read this every day for 15 years. It got so crazy, I read this for 15 years, every single day. I would leave the house and I'd forget it. And I drive back to get it because I, you know, it's like one of these crazy alcoholic things. I thought, if I don't read it, I'll drink or something like that. That's how fanatical I was about this. So I'm just going to read you. I just got to, you know, because I left my books. I said, I'm going to read April 28th. This is April 28th to you. I want to read this to you. This is what they were reading for like, not you know, before we published our AA book. What's it called? Daily Medications or something? Daily Reflections. This is what they were reading for 15, 20 years or whatever it is. And before this, well, I guess it was the Bible. You're going to see the. Now I want to read you April 28th. I'm just. This is not random. This is April 28th. Now you ready for this? This is the crap I was reading. No wonder I'm so warped. You know what I mean? This is the stuff. And you tell me whether you hear any of this stuff in AA today. Whether you even hear the thought of this in AA today. You tell me whether you ever read anything written in AA today. Tell me whether daily, what's the name of the thing? Daily Reflection sounds like this. This is the stuff I was brought up on. And then you'll understand why I'm so warped. April 28th, thought for the day. It's divided into three things. Thought for the day, meditation day, and prayer for the day. Thought for the day. We're so glad to be free from liquor that we do something about it. We get into action. We come to meetings regularly. We go out and try to help other alcoholics. We pass on the good news whenever we get a chance. In a spirit of thankfulness to God, we get into action. The AA program is simple. Submit yourself to God. Find release from liquor and get into action. Do these things and keep doing them, and you're all set for the rest of your life. Have I got into action? Okay, pretty good. You know, they probably have that in Daily Reflections. Here's the meditation for the day. God's eternal quest must be the tracking down of souls. God's eternal quest must be the tracking down of souls. You should join him in his quest. Through briars, through waste places, through glades, up mountain heights, down into valleys, God leads you. But ever with his leadership goes your helping hand. Glorious to follow where the leader goes. You are seeking lost sheep. By the way, that's from Luke 15. You are bringing the good news into places where it has not been known before. You may not know which soul you will help. But you can leave all results to God. Just go with him in his eternal quest for souls. Why don't you go find that in Daily Medication or whatever? What's that book? What's the book? I'm sorry. I don't have respect. I'm sorry. You can send this up to New York. I don't have a great deal of respect for watering down the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. They can call me a bleeding deacon. They can call me whatever they want. I don't have a great respect for watering things down. I pray for the day. I pray that I may follow God in his eternal quest for souls. I pray that I may offer God my helping hand. Now you read that crap every day for 15 years. Every day in the morning when you read that crap through cancer, through bounce checks, through brokenness. Through broken relationships, through long nights, through when you think you're going to die, when you're physically ill, when you have no money, when your house is being foreclosed on, when they're treating you crappy, when there's all sorts of crap going on, you read that crap every day and come out of it and get better, okay, and be lifted up. You read that crap and see where you are 15 years and how you're talking at AA meetings. See whether you have problems making a decision for God. See whether you have problems with the relationship. See whether your relationship with God is fuzzy. See who you hang out with. See what you're doing with your life. And then see what incredible transformation comes over you with an ability to live life with strength. When did we scrub out the power out of AA and make it a form of, as they say in the Bible, a form of religion without power? When did it just become like a psychological sort of, like, every meeting is a group therapy session where we whine and cry and everything like that, and if you can just stay sober and away from booze, that's good enough, and just don't talk too much about God or about the power or about souls, about the Holy Spirit or any of that stuff that sounds churchy, because people might get the idea that God actually exists. When you have a book, God either is or he isn't. What isn't? What is your choice to be? Now let me read a couple of things to you. Out of our literature. Out of our literature. I'm not making this stuff up. It says we're selfish. It says we're self-centered. It says that's the root of our problems. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-ability. We step on the toes of others, they retaliate. They retaliate, so our troubles we think are basically of our own making. They rise of ourselves. The alcohol's extreme example of self-will and riot, though he usually doesn't think so. It goes on to see where we see that the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real or imagined, have the power to actually kill, that this is devastating stuff. It even goes on to say we must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. And then it says, God makes that possible. It doesn't say doing the next right thing makes it possible, or a treatment center makes that possible, or your sponsor makes that possible. It says God makes that possible. Now, it doesn't matter whether you like me. It doesn't matter whether you think I'm crazy or fanatical or talk too much about God. It doesn't matter. You see, you know what matters to me? It matters what our program of recovery says. You tell me what the program of recovery says. Should I make believe that's not there because I don't like it? What does the program say? Somebody was asking you, what does the program of recovery say about how we get rid of selfishness? Would you say God makes that possible? Or would you sort of fuzz it up and say God, but it's not really God, you know, it's sort of like, it's God, but don't worry about the God thing, it's not really God, because you might, you know, like offend somebody. This is the how and what, it says, neither could we reduce our self-centeredness as much by wishing or trying our own power. We had to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided here and after this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed the freedom. It's the keystone. It's the main deal. Now it goes on to say, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He's not even the higher power. He's the highest power. There's only one. There's the highest power. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and did his work well. Is that what your thoughts are about every day? How can I be close to him and do his work well? How could you even know what it means to be close to him and do his work well unless you start developing a sense of who he is? If you have a fuzzy sense of like, well, whatever, you know, it's the tree, how do you know to stay close to him and do his work well? Well, you don't really need to stay close to him and do his work well. If you've decided that you don't really need God, you'll just sort of decide and just do the next right thing. You'll be God. It goes on to say, it says, more and more, he says, established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plan's design. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we can contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. And then it goes on to say, then there's the third step prayer, and I'm not even going to read the third step prayer. But immediately after the third step prayer, which is the prayer we say on our knees, that's the suggestion, then this line comes. We thought well before taking the step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Now, I'm not saying that as a newcomer you have to comprehend this or feel at 3 months, at 6 months, at 2 years, at 10 years, you have to feel the way I feel now. Obviously, I've been warped. But I mean, I've been brainwashed. There's no question about it. By a lot of loving sponsors who have, you know, really beat this stuff into me. I understand that. I'm not complaining because I like the results. See, I'm not complaining because I like the. I used to be brainwashed and have the crap beaten into me by guys who used to sit around bars who were divorced. I used to sit in bars with guys who looked at broads, and all they did was talk about them and talk bullshit, you know what I mean? And didn't have relationships with their kids, and they were drunk, and I was brainwashed by them. I didn't like the results. So I got brainwashed by the pastors and the priests and the guys that were talking about God and AA, and I like the results. I like the way I feel. So I'm going to talk about that deal. You know, it's your life. Hey, flush it down the toilet. That's what I'll do. Whatever you want to do with it. It's okay with me. You don't have to buy into any of this stuff. Don't let anybody say Russell is telling you to do this. I'm not telling you to do anything. I'm telling you what I did. I'm also reading you stuff in the book so you can decide whether what I did was completely contrary to what they're talking about in Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? Just see whether it's different than what they're talking about. It says here. It's not a matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn the truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. How many times do you see in AA meetings that the entire meeting is about, in certain respects, by people they want to talk about their mother, their father, their sister, their aunt, their job, their boss. The whole meeting is about people. It's about what's going on in their lives and people, and this is how, it's all about the problem and about the people, and somehow you get out and maybe you feel good because you got it off your chest, but somehow the problem never went away. And the one son of a gun who wants to talk about God and his relationship with God, they're saying, shut up, can't you see we're having an AA meeting? Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone, the only condition that he trusts in God and clean house. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he gets his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. Do you think the people who wrote this book were into the God thing? Do you think they took it seriously? Do you think it was the most important thing in their lives? Listen, you're lucky I don't have the book Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. You're lucky I'm not quoting from that book. Isn't it bad enough that I have this book where it says, still you may say I will not have the benefit of contact with you to write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon Him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. God is supposed to show you who to hang around with. Do you think God is going to tell you to go hang around the guy who's an atheist? Think about it. Maybe you. If atheism is okay, do you think that's what this book says? Do you really think that's what it says? Hey, listen, I got news for you. Anybody can come in here. Anybody can come in here. Don't be telling me that this book is pro-atheism, because we have a whole section on Chapter of the Agnostics, which is written to agnostics and atheists, to explain to them that this kind of thinking has to be abandoned. So don't turn this thing on its head just for PC or political correctness so that theism and atheism, nothing means anything and anything goes. They wrote a book that meant something. Don't turn it into meaning nothing. You know, there's an old saying, you got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only little. God will constantly disclose more to you. There he is again. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do for each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you can't transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for AA existence. Abandon yourself to God. This is the great... You would think, reading this book, that every meeting you go to would be exactly like this meeting. I mean, honestly, if you're reading this book, doing this group, you would expect when you go into AA that this wouldn't be unusual. I wouldn't be looked at as a freak. You would think every AA meeting would look like this. Say, well, it's AA. Why is it not like this? Do you think it has anything to do with the program? It has to do with the fellowship. It has to do with the makeup of the fellowship. You see the problem with AA? You know what the problem with AA is? It's made up of alcoholics. They're defiant. They don't want to do it. You got thousands of people going to thousands of meetings. They walk into the door, and in the back of the head, they're basically saying, I don't want to do any of this shit. Even ones that want to do it don't want to do it. They want to do it their way. And so now out pops a book like this, and the results are you mix of books like this with people like us, and like three people stay sober for over 20 years, and the rest are miserable and drinking. And they can't understand why, because they're not working the program. If you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what's in this book, I feel sorry for you. I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. That's Dr. Bob in his story in the big book. That's our, I'm not, this is our literature. Bill Wilson to Henrietta and then Bill Dotson says, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. On and on and on. Thousands of statements, point-blank statements, to that effect, strident statements. You know, you read Dr. Bob's going by, read what this thing is about. See, so what, you know, did I do this stuff? Did I feel this way? No, I didn't. But you want to know something? For some reason, without even knowing about it, I seem to have hung around people that were doing this deal. I don't even know what they were doing. I don't even know whether I picked up on this. I just hung around the guys that were doing this deal. You know, I mean, my second sponsor, Dr. Bob, my first sponsor gave me this book. My first sponsor, he died after 20 years of sobriety, he gave me this book. The 24-hour book. Read it every day for 15 years. Now, quite frankly, after 15 years, I stopped reading every day. I started reading another book. I started reading other things. But it gave me a real strong basis every day for 50. He gave me this book. You know what my second sponsor gave me? He handed me a book called Sermon on the Mount. He handed me the Bible. You know my third sponsor who's here today? John Glenn. He's got 53 years sobriety. I met him at a Bible study. He handed me other things. All my sponsors have led me in the direction towards a relationship with God and fully defining God and having an understanding of God. So it's not fuzzy with me. Where I hang around is not who I hang around with. It's not fuzzy. It's not a fuzzy thing with me. I know who I'm supposed to hang with. I know who I'm not supposed to hang with. Does that mean that I don't go to AA meetings and I don't talk to... Listen, I'll stack against you how many AA meetings I go to and who I talk to and, you know, and the people I hang out with. You know, I love AA. You know, I love you no matter what. It's fine with me. But I've got to talk about, just like Bill, I've got to talk about what actually worked for me. Everything that's happened in my life that's been incredible to me, that's worked any type of... transformation in my life has been a result of this stuff over a period of years. This is where I've been led. You know, so this is the stuff I've got to talk about when I go to meetings. You know, and I'm compelled to talk about this stuff. You know, I can't help talking about this stuff. You know, I love good AA speakers. I was brought up on the Clancys, on the Johnny H's, on, you know, all these guys, the Sandy B's. I love good AA speakers. And a lot of good AA speakers, quite frankly, maybe in a way that's not as strident at me, somehow get the God message across. They really do. They honestly do. Some of the greatest God messages come across. I'm not that kind of entertainment, you know. I'm not entertaining, okay? I'm not, you know, every once in a while I get a laugh and people think it's funny and they think it's cute, but I'm not the kind of guy that's good, let's have a banquet and Russell will entertain us. Because what will happen is they'll end up throwing up their food, you know what I'm talking, they'll say, where's this guy coming from? I mean, I understand that, it's not my deal, you know, my deal is what I'm talking about tonight. This is my deal, this is what I do. You know, somebody told me the other day, I was with somebody, and they said, well, I don't know whether you can you really talk about that? They're not going to like it. And I said, well, I guess they'll stop inviting me. I mean, that's what's going to happen. They'll just stop inviting me, you know, but all I do is get phone calls. So apparently, somebody wants to hear this stuff. Apparently, somebody wants, now listen to me, not everybody wants to hear this stuff. But you want to know what the good thing is? The people that don't want to hear this stuff, they don't show up or they leave. Right? Right? They don't show up and leave. But somebody wants to hear this stuff. Somebody's listening out there. Stuff is happening. Thing is going on. And we have just guys who believe the way I do, believe in the God thing, have just as much a right to be in Alcoholics Anonymous as atheists. Do you understand that? People who believe in God and are serious about this have as much right to be here than atheists and agnostics. To have their meetings as atheists and as agnostics. So you just have to be bold about that stuff. Okay? God bless you.